Hello, 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 and welcome to the Drag Race Recap here on Reality TV Wrap Ups. I'm your host, Liana Boris, and we are here to talk about episode 7 of RuPaul's Drag Race season 13. I can't believe we're already here, like halfway through the friggin' season. Who would have thought? Not me, but I am not alone. Of course, we have our fabulous panel here to talk about this episode with me. Let me first welcome in Beth Dixon. Beth, how are you?
I'm doing really well. I have the UK song stuck in my head constantly. I think I am getting sick over it. So I can't wait to figure out what the prescription is to get bing, bang, bong out of my head. But I can't wait for it.
Yeah. And we will talk about UK because there's a lot to talk about with UK. But yeah, not just the song, not just the bing, bang, bong song. But let's bring in the fabulous Aman Adwin. Aman, how are you?
I'm great. This week in both the US and the UK were interesting weeks. So I'm ready to talk about some Drag Race.
Yes, I am as well. Okay, so let's go ahead and jump on in. First, though, I do want to address, we got a question about last week's episode with all the talk about sort of the disco knowledge and all of that. And the question is that was the lack of disco knowledge on Drag Race was terrible on Drag Race, or am I just showing my age? I'm in RuPaul's age group. They had no idea who the RuPaul's Charles Nelson Reilly joke was. Is this jaw-dropping or am I just old? Help a senior out here. So look, I can start with this question. I am now learning, especially being on TikTok as a 30-something year old woman, what it is like to now have youths, like true youths.
Youths. Okay?
Youths. And so sometimes I'm like, I'm sorry, how do you not know that? I'm sorry, we're not allowed to wear skinny jeans anymore. I'm sorry, I'm not allowed to part my hair to the side anymore. And I think it's made
crying,
me a
laughing emoji.
Yeah. Okay. I don't even care. I'm still going to use it. I'm still going to use it. Same. Call me old. I don't even care. But it has.
Oh, that's a thing now?
Yeah, dude. Oh my gosh. I cried laughing emoji when I saw that apparently that's not cool anymore.
Wow.
But anyway, So it has made me maybe more appreciative of both perspectives of being like, look, you know, you need to be understanding that, you know, these kids may not know this, but then also at the same time, like, hey, don't sass your elders. So yeah. I think there's something to it from both perspectives.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I didn't grow up with a family that listened to a lot of disco. We listened to mostly, like classic rock and that kind of thing. I have my family are actually a whole bunch of musicians. So it's kind of cool to grow up in that era, when you had parents that went to college in the 70s and such. But I'll be honest, I didn't understand that until I started learning more about LGBTQ culture and history, that disco is a big part of that. So I know that I still have a lot of learning to do with it. I would imagine that a lot of the queens who are of my age group, who are either in their early 30s or in their 20s, also don't understand that too, which is why I thought it was great that they did the disco documentary portion of it. But like you said last week, it just wasn't produced in the best way. So hopefully there can be ways to, I don't know, make it so that the queens kind of get the reference. At the same time, RuPaul, you got to learn the youth references here too, buddy. So.
Exactly. It's a two-way street. We're all just learning from each other, okay? Well, we may judge a little bit, and I still may wear skinny jeans every single day, but still,
I didn't eat Tide Pods, so there you go.
Yeah, I mean, we can always rest on the Tide Pods. But I mean, I feel like, yeah, like it's, you know, RuPaul's of a certain age. The person who wrote this question is of a certain age, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like, I mean, I like disco music. I didn't necessarily grow up with it. A lot of it was like self-exploration, you know? So, yeah. And even then, I still don't really, I'm not an encyclopedia, so I'm not going to be able to spit out, you know, some of the top artists of the 70s, but it's music that I enjoy, and it's music that I'm interested in. It's music that I, you know, because I'm interested in it, I go and seek it out. But yeah, a lot of the queens on the show right now are millennials. You know, we have a few Gen Xers in there as well, or excuse me, Gen Zs. But some Gen Xers in there sometimes too. So I mean, yeah, it kind of does suck that the queen that is like around the same age group as RuPaul was the one that actually went home during this challenge. But yeah, I mean, I just feel like, yeah, I mean, I feel like it is a two-way street. I feel like RuPaul has to make sure that he stays up to date. And I feel like because of the fact that he does run a show that is enjoyed primarily by people that are younger than himself, he's always like constantly embroiled within the pop culture of our time. And he's, you know, just trying to be like, hey guys, remember like the old disco track? Remember that? Yeah, that was fun.
And it all has value. Exactly. Yeah. Well, and it all has value. And I think also tying in, especially the disco sucks movement to sort of a lot of the racism and a lot of the homophobia that was going on as well, I think is really important. And how essentially you can use something as like, oh, it's just music. Oh, we're just banning music. Oh, is it just about the music? So, you know, I think it's all an educational experience. We all learn in here and we're all putting it together.
Yeah. So. I would suggest watching The Get Down on Netflix, if anybody wants to learn about, you know, the beginnings of disco and hip hop in New York City. I really enjoyed the series. I don't know if historians will particularly enjoy the series, but if anything, it's a nice little, you know, toe dipper to get yourself, you know, acclimated with the time.
I appreciate that because I that's something I'm always interested in learning a little bit more about, is just how the beginning of different music genres and movements start. So I'm definitely going to check that out.
Great. Okay, so let's move into this episode. So, Bossy Rossi is back, unfortunately, but that's fine. We'll get into everything. But first, after the elimination, we have a lot of the fallout of Candy eliminating Tamisha. I feel like there wasn't a whole lot new here that we learned. It was just sort of tying up that loose story end that we had seen over the, you know, the Untucked and then the previous episode. So then we can hop into the next day in the workroom, the reading challenge, because reading is what?
Fundamental.
Yes. Okay. Were there any particular reads that stood out to you, Aman, in this challenge?
Lovely.
Oh my God, Aman. Okay. If you're watching the video version on Rob has a podcast, a YouTube page.
John Lennon's here.
No. Aman. Yeah,
You coming for me, Beth? That is coming for me
and
already.
That's a read.
The reads this episode, there were a few zingers, but nothing really to call home about. I'm not about to sit here and read these girls because it is one thing that I'm really not that great at. It's insult comedy. I was the kid that got picked on in school, and I would always like be like, well, you are shorter than me. That would be like what I would And I wasn't very tall, so that's saying something back then. I won't read them for that, but yeah, there really weren't a lot of them. But the one thing that I felt was that, you know, because who ended up being in the bottom for this challenge, they were really editing against Elliot with two T's. And I found some of the stuff that she said on par with some of the other mid to low tier reads that some of the other girls said that the editing were like, oh yeah, they showed like positive response to that. So I'm like, is it just an Elliot with two T's thing or was she actually that bad?
This episode was produced. Like you could tell that they were feeding the queens to say stuff in the confessionals and everything. Like we'll get into it a little bit later when it comes down to like the judging of the challenge, but my goodness. This was a produced episode. I felt like Gottmik deserved the win here for the reading challenge. And I'm like, I know it's only been 3 days, but as we mentioned earlier, I'm getting older and now I can't even remember any of the reads now that I'm put on the spot. But I remember that. Well, that's also indicative of how weak in comparison maybe this reading challenge was in past seasons. But it wasn't season 7 tier. So at least, you know, they have that going for it. They did a little bit better than that.
Yeah, I think for me, that was the thing is that it wasn't notably bad. Right. Mm-hmm. So like it's not like I can go back and I can be like, ooh, yeah, because totally. I'm with you, Aman. The sound effects in this episode were on another level. Like it was just like something happened. Shade rattle. You know, something happened. The like happy. Clap, yeah. The shade sound, no.
I was so mad when I went to go buy one of those buttons at DragCon and they were sold out. I was so mad. I'm so thankful that one of us have one then.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, we're also, look, we're trying to step our pussies up, okay? Because. We're getting a little fancy. We're getting a little fancy here.
I'm upset that Tamisha Amon wasn't here for the reading challenge, because I feel like she could have read the girls down and it would have been amazing.
She was waiting for it, I feel. I mean, she was doing it already and chomping at the bit in Untucked. So, I mean, this would have been a field day.
I mean, she's quick, gives the great commentary. I'm sure it would have been amazing.
Little girl. I could say that all the time.
Yeah, I mean, for me, so like I said, there's no that like really stood out. I thought Denali was fun with Gottmik. Mm-hmm. She had to read about the focal fry. Any of the reads of Utica were hilarious. So like Utica being white twerking to disco. Tina had a pretty good read of Utica talking about the hidden bodies. But yeah, I mean, you know, it was fine.
Utica is just easy to read, though.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, exactly. Like, is it because of the talent of the queens or just because Utica's so quirky? Like, it's easy to read her.
It's all coming back to me, but there was one read that somebody said about Tina Burner, which was like, how much Tina have you burned or something like that? And I was like, oh shit, we're going that far. All right.
Yeah, that was fun. I liked that one.
All right. Yeah, it was fine. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's just hard, like, when you have such good titans of reads, like, that come out of, like, stuff like Season 6 or All-Stars 2 or I think All-Stars 3 had a good one, too. So, like, yeah, compared to some of the great ones, it was kind of like, it's fine.
So I'm just like Amon. I'm also terrible at any type of insult comedy. It's a lot of just like, yeah, well, you're stupid. And so I try to pocket the good ones. And there were none from this that I wanted to remember to try to use on someone else. Therefore, not the best reading challenge.
Done. Yeah.
It's fine. It'd be fine. Well, now we have the main event, which is the Improv for Your Life Bossy Rossi After Dark. This time, not just a regular old daytime show. Oh no.
It's a viral moment.
If only it truly were Ross. If only it truly were.
I know.
You know that you're not doing well in the challenge if Ross is the one that's making you laugh as an audience member. Like, I'm watching this sometimes and being like, I'd rather see what Ross's reaction is to it than the queen's reaction to what they're saying. Or
like when he is moving it forward, you know?
That's what I think makes this such a cringy challenge. Mm-hmm. It's because Ross is really good at improv and he's just like really good as playing himself in this kind of talk show host kind of mentality. Like, this is literally what his career was made of, being like Ross the intern for Jay Leno. And then you have just, you know, queens being thrown into it. But
okay, well, let's just jump on in, because to be honest, I mean, there's not a whole lot. We get a little bit of setup for each one of these, but it can definitely tie into us discussing each skit. So the very first skit that we see in this episode is the I'm pregnant with my imaginary boyfriend's baby. And this is Rosé, Lala, and Denali that are all working together. They're all pregnant and they all give birth to imaginary babies that I guess are apparently someone else's baby. It's all very confusing. I don't even quite know where to start here, Beth. Help me break this down.
Well, in a traditional like Maury, you know, Jerry Springer fashion, none of it makes sense, but you're still enthralled. I thought this was one of the better groups. I thought they started this off really strong. I thought Rosé and Denali in particular did a really good job feeding off of each other and having a good relationship. And I'll put it out there, even though Lala was definitely the weakest out of the three here, I don't think she deserved to be in the bottom for this performance. There needs to be somebody who's the straight man when you have three of them. And she was doing a really good job of it. You could tell that she had a good quip as she came in, like the motion sensor light went off on the garage. She went, oh, I forgot what neighborhood I was in. And I thought that was really funny. And there was like a little, like, there was like that, like, deafening pause. So they were trying to set her up.
Right.
That's what I mean by the overproduced thing. Like, there were things that she did that were clearly funny that they made to seem like it wasn't funny. And there were things that she did that weren't as great. But I don't think that she deserved necessarily to be in the bottom.
I thought she was great, too. I mean, and I agree with you. I think that there really has to be someone that's sort of like is the anchor for the audience, someone that the audience can relate to just to keep. Because if everybody is up and up, then the comedy sort of becomes really, really just sensationalist and not intelligent anymore. And so you need mm-hmm. somebody to be there to center things. And I felt like she was doing that. I don't necessarily know if that was intentional, because maybe she just wasn't as quick as the other two.
Sure.
But I don't think that, like, I agree. I don't think that she deserved to be all the way on the bottom. I think that there were probably some times where she missed a cue or she missed the joke that she could have made. I mean, like, I mean, the visual gag of having the white stomach as a black mm-hmm. pregnant lady was hilarious. And I feel like saying something like, oh, well, my baby's colorblind or something like that would have been hilarious, but she just dropped the ball there. So I definitely see, you know, when you juxtapose her with Denali and Rosé, it kind of gets a little, but yeah, I mean, I think she did a good job. I think that she was present. She was never like off the tracks. You know, she was always present within the scene. And look, this is probably the third time that I've been forced to relive my improv drama horrors on this damn podcast. And so you're going to find it really, really rare for me that I am going to read somebody for not being the best improv artist, because it's hard. It is hard.
It's super hard.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And to just always have something funny to say. It's just like, it's difficult. And I feel like she also didn't take away from the scene. I felt like she ended up being a necessary part of the skit. You know, was she, as she stated, her inspiration of Shanae from Martin, which I never thought I would get a Martin reference on the show, but here we are. that you know, yeah, she wasn't necessarily the over the top, but there were those few moments that did make me laugh. And the other thing too, and this is kind of in general for all of the skits, but the fact that the other queens were allowed to sit in the back and make commentary, and obviously I'm not opposed to them watching, but it allowed the editors, and this goes to the sort of this over editing kind of storyline, it allows the editors to then pick and choose the quotes that they want in order to craft that narrative that's going to go forward. So with the sound effects and with all of those comments, it made me feel that she did worse than I think she actually did.
Right. I totally agree with that. And I also think that one thing that I watched this the first time with a few friends, and I was saying, like, we have to remember that Gottmik and Candy and Tina are always going to, like, overpraise the other ones too. Mm-hmm. So, like, when they were like, wow, like, we'll get to Candy in a second, but, like, you know, wow, Candy's choice is really paying off. Like, all of us kind of looked at each other and was like, what do you mean? But, like, clearly that's what the edit wanted you to say. And they're going to take those little bits and throw them in there. So it's like, you have to remember that whatever the queens are saying, take that with a grain of salt because of their personal relationships with each of the other contestants.
Mm-hmm. Well, honestly, now I'm like, look, if you're trying to be on Drag Race, I mean, take notes now, because if you ever get put in a position where you're at an episode on a challenge where you're allowed to give commentary, trash the best girl in the room. Just utterly trash her.
100%.
So that the edit is forced to send her home. If they're going to overproduce these episodes, then I'm going to overproduce my edits, okay?
Like, I mean, plus it gives you a storyline. So win, win, win.
Oh my God, yeah. Be the acid Betty reading Trixie's makeup and Untucked. Like, be that queen.
Like, if I was shitty, I would just be trashing Simone all the time. Like, oh my God, she's just horrible. I mean, that wig, that dress, nothing she says is funny. It's not hilarious. If anything, I'll get the delusional edit and I'll take it.
Right. She's the same hand movement on stage every time.
No one wants to go to the factory. It's not, you're not going to make factory happen.
Stop saying factory.
And then what else did she say? Well, we'll get to her. Yeah. Hello, I think is what she said when she was like, oh, hello. Anyway. All right. Okay. So we talked about Lala. Let's touch on Rosé and Denali. So Rosé, I thought, did quite well. You know, she's also was the queen who, first of all, by the way, the first queen to fumble with the gate. So when Simone got praise for it later, I was like, okay, but Rosé, like, literally just did that at the beginning.
Yeah. And made a good joke about it. Oh, pregnancy brain. Like, I mean, she was able to show that she was quick on her feet about it.
Yeah. And I thought she interacted well with Ross. So I thought Rosé did a really fabulous job here.
Yeah, I agree. I thought that she was really good. I think what was so comical about her character, just physically looking at it, is how high the pregnancy belly is on her. Like, it's fully just underneath her chest instead of being lower. Yeah. And so I was hoping there, because you know that there's those old wives' tales, if you're carrying low, it's a boy or a girl or something. I don't even know what it is, but supposedly you're supposed to know the sex of the baby that way. And it would have been really funny if she was like, carrying it this high means it's going to be invisible or something like that. Like, it would have been a great little moment.
But yeah, I mean, and then Denali did fine.
You know, I thought Denali was fine. Yeah.
Yeah. She was fine. She was fine. Yeah. I mean,
I thought she did better than other people who were in the, she did the thing where she came out and she started like kind of grinding up on the invisible boyfriend and all this stuff. But I really felt like Rosé and Denali, we've now seen them work a couple weeks in a row. They work really well together. They know they feed off each other's energy. When Denali was in the bottom two a few weeks ago, Rosé was the one that was really picking her up. And so I really like this kind of relationship that we're seeing. It's not being as produced as much as the trio that we were just talking about. Mm-hmm. But I think that they work really well together. And I think honestly, their detriment was the fact that they were like both good. Like if one had been noticeably weaker than the other, I feel like the other queen would have been in the top.
That's possible. They do like pair well. And like, you know, their hug that they did where their bellies like touched each other, which was really funny, and they couldn't like reach each other. Yeah. So I don't know. I think it's I feel like I'm having deja vu that this is the same thing as last week where they performed together. And so,
yeah.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, one or both of them should have been in the top.
Mm hmm.
I do think, and we'll get to this as well, I think that Rosé did better than Denali in the challenge, but I liked the concept and design of
the look of
Denali's better than Rosé's, but I don't know.
And I think ultimately that the looks also played into who ended up in the bottom too. So I think that obviously the looks this week ended up being really important. All right.
Yeah.
So let's move on to the next skit, which is Breaking My Silence, Escaping the Cult of Mimeology. And this is, of course, Gottmik as the therapist, Olivia as the mime that was in the cult, I guess, and then Utica as the odd choice of the bimbo mom. But I think I understood what Utica was going for, but like it just wasn't well executed. So, Amon, what did you think about this overall?
Well, great for Miss Gottmik here. I feel like she found a great niche for herself. She was able to deliver, you know, she was kind of like the straight man of this group, right? Like where she was grounding everybody, but she got a few good lines in there as well. It's really great recipe for improv because the mime and the psychiatrist, like one literally not being able to speak and then the other one being able to make up whatever she wants to make up and then either the mime can follow suit. And then you can switch it off. And then the mime kind of leads the psychiatrist to say certain things. So that was a really great dynamic between the two of them. Utica.
Utica.
Utica. I just... Where was the character going? Who was she was supposed to be? Like, if your daughter had to escape you to go be a part of a mime cult, I feel like you're supposed to come in and scream. Every line is supposed to be super duper loud. You're supposed to be talking over Ross. You're supposed to be talking over the psychiatrist. You're supposed to be just loud all the time. And it was like Dina Lohan, but like not quite Dina Lohan. I don't know what it was. It was just a hodgepodge of mess. And then she's rolling on the ground at the end of the scene, like obviously trying to get a few laughs in there, but laughs based off of what? And then telling her daughter to be quiet, and her daughter is quiet. That's the whole point of the, I just don't get it. I really wanted, because she was really doing a lot. She certainly wasn't boring. She was doing a lot. It just didn't make any sense. It improv has to make sense. You know,
she was doing the most, and the most wasn't necessary for her character. I think that where she really struggled here was that she was really banking on having a very physical character to play, as we know that that's where her strengths in comedy come from, her physicality, whether it's her facial expressions or the kind of movements that she does. And I don't know that she understood how to interpret the mother character. I almost would have gone the opposite route, and instead of being someone who's loud and all that kind of stuff, be someone who was super strict about everything. Like, don't look at me so loudly or something like that. That makes it like you made this person become a mime because you never wanted them to make
shrink
a noise,
themselves
like shrink
mime,
themselves, yeah. And that kind of thing. So if she had come out looking like a nun or had come out like you know, just being super conservative looking. And I don't know, I think there would have been something there too. But that point that you and I have very different interpretations of what the mother could be is mind-boggling to me, that she chose what should have been in the Rosé Denali sketch of a character, not in this sketch. Mm-hmm. And so she really, I think she really dropped the ball here. Yeah. I think personally, she should have been in the bottom two. Over Lala. And then what I do have to say, like, props to Olivia for fighting and not backing down, because I think that she gives off the personality that she's easily trampled and kind of given to other people. And she didn't. And I love that she was like, no, I'm going to do this character. And she hit a home run with it. She was really great. And then I don't think Gottmik gets enough praise. She played the psychiatrist kind of character super well. Again, to your point, straight woman kind of just sitting there. I'm like, yeah. And you know what that is, Ross? You know what that is? And like bringing Ross in on the conversation, that's such a smart thing to do. You see those intellectuals do that on talk shows. So just she knew who her character was and was able to embody it. Whereas someone like Lala, who had that kind of character that's supposed to be the expert in the field, really kind of fumbled the ball with the character portion of it. And that's where Gottmik, I thought, did a really wonderful job. So I, you know, props to the two of them. Utica girl. Mm-mm.
The hardest I laughed, I think, out of all the skits was when Gottmik was translating for Olivia. That was the hardest I laughed. And that's both of them. Like the fact that Olivia stopped and did the ice cream thing. And then Gottmik goes, oh, well, she stopped for ice cream. She had plenty of time or something like that. Like those little things together just worked so, so well. I thought that that was really, really hilarious. And I thought both of them actually did a very, very good job. And the Utica thing was just so distracting. And it I was like, okay, again, yeah, the character just wasn't. It doesn't have to be complicated. It's not supposed to be complicated. So where are you going, girl, with this? Like, what's the deal with the drink, the Starbucks drink? Like, that made absolutely no sense. I wanted a tall drink and then I got a da-da. Like, I don't know. It was just, it was very confusing. Yeah. It was distracting. And I felt like while Lala maybe Lala didn't add as much, but she didn't distract me as much.
Yeah.
My anxiety was so high through that joke, because I could just tell that she was going to take that Starbucks drink somewhere and then it fell off right in the middle. And I was just like, oh my God, I've done that before.
But what I understood that what she was trying to do was not have a point to what she was talking, but just talking.
And that's why she turned to being a mime. What it was.
And that she'd like talk so much that her daughter didn't have a word in edgewise. And that's why she joined a cult or something like that. I got that. That's the concept that she was going for. It was poorly executed. And I think that's also a situation where maybe her teammates didn't understand what was happening as much, because if they knew specifically Gottmik, if Gottmik knew that that's what Utica was going for, there's plenty of opportunities as the expert to be like, see, what you're doing here again is talking so much that you're not allowing her to express herself and do something like that. And that could have tied it in a little bit. But you know what? If they knew that that was the concept and Utica didn't, and good for them to kind of sabotage a little bit. I don't know.
If they were like, let's just throw her under the bus. We're not going to explain. Bye. I mean, Gottmik at one point goes like, I think we may have cracked the code. Like, this is why your daughter has joined the cult, because I don't know, you're loud or something. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. It was disappointing.
Lack of preparation on that one.
I'm worried about Utica. I'm like fearing that she may not belong for this world, and that makes me sad. Yeah, because all I can think about is that sleeping bag look. It's just such a redeeming quality.
The judges, I think, just don't get her. I think it's just like not quite translating, and I'm worried that if there's too many weeks in a row that are like this, then it's like gonna end up.
Like she used up all of her RuPaul laugh tokens in the workroom that one time, and now she's out.
And then didn't even apply it to that challenge. That's my point, is like she's so good, but she doesn't know how to apply it into the challenges.
Oh, Utica. Well, we'll see. I mean, you know, she's still in the competition. She ends up evading the final or the bottom two, so maybe there's still a little bit of goodwill there. Alrighty, our next skit is the former teen queens. Where are they now? Tiffany Gibson and Lil Deb Deb. And this is, of course, Simone and Candy that play the titular Tiffany Gibson and Lil. Oh no, I'm sorry, Deborah, darling. Deborah. That's Deborah, Beth.
Oh my God. Okay, so I have thoughts here. Simone, fantastic, great. Love the character. Love the background. Loved everything she was able to do. In what world was Candy Muse so amazing that she deserved to be in the top? I was so bored by her. I didn't even look like she was doing a character half the time. Like, everyone's like, oh, she is doing such a good job. I'm like, no, she's reeling it back because she doesn't know what to do. You can see the lostness in her eyes. Like, there were times where she was just going like this back and forth with her head, just watch. It was like she was watching a ping pong match between her, Simone and Ross. And I just sat back and I was like, how is she in the top? Which they called that she was in the top of the bottom. I was like, oh, bitch is in the bottom again. Second week in a row. They said that she was in the top and I literally was raging. I even tweeted about it, which, like, I try to keep my thoughts a little bit off of Twitter for as much so I can just get them out here. But I was so mad that I literally was like going on like a tantrum. I was like, what the hell? Rosé and Denali do a really great job playing off of each other for the second week in a row. And Candy is just getting this unnecessary, in my opinion. Oh, wow. She followed what the judges had to say with her, you know, not just being loud Candy. And I'm like, this is the one challenge where she should be loud Candy. Like, that would be amazing. Or be able to channel that loud energy into something else. So I don't get it with Candy, personally. I love her look. I think it's like it's a perfect look for that character. But I do think like Simone really carried this. And in my opinion, if Olivia wasn't going to win this challenge, it should have been Simone. So it was, I think this was all Simone. And for me, all the laughs came from me for Simone.
All right, Amon, what say you? Where do you stand on this?
Yeah, so I mean, so a piece of me, I feel a lot of ways about this. So, I mean, this all started because Michelle Visage told Candy that, you know, she's from the Bronx. She loves it about her. She keeps it real. Now she wants to see more range. And I understand that. But at the same time, I'm like, why does that mean that Candy has to mute herself entirely? Because if that's who she is, right, and that's who she is, you know, you can't really ask someone to change their personality. It's kind of like how we talk about, like, whenever the judges tell a girl that they're really not getting much personality from her, that's like the kiss of death. But now what you're doing to Candy is like saying, okay, we like your personality, but we want to see something else. It's like, what else do you want to see? And why aren't you telling that to the other girls that have the same personality from week to week to week to week? Now, I understand wanting to see her act differently in acting challenges because not every character calls for Candy's personality. I get that. But to reward her for this performance, when she said that she was going to go for Valley Girl, that was not, where was the hair flip? Where was the, oh my God, where was the, oh, like, oh my God, like, where was any of that? There were none of those mannerisms. It was just, it was as if there was a time bomb sitting in her mouth and she was trying not to make it go off and she didn't want to talk. That's what it felt like to me. It felt like,
yeah,
it felt like Candy was like the Hulk, like sitting there just waiting for somebody to do something for her to pop off. And she was just like, I'm keeping it in. I'm keeping it in, Ross. I'm keeping it in. Deborah, Deborah, whatever. Like, I'm keeping it in. That's what it felt like to me. And it was just so uncomfortable to watch. And the fact that they rewarded her for that sends such a bad message. Because what is she going to do for the next challenge? It just, look, I am such a Candy Muse fan. I want to see her do well. I, like many others, can see why she's probably not going to be the winner of this competition. But at the same time, I don't want to like pull all of my chips off the Candy table yet. And so I'm holding out hope that there is a path to victory for her. But I don't want to see her go down this path just because Michelle is like, you need to get it.
Yeah, I agree so much. And I feel like that bomb analogy, that's perfect. And Beth, also the panic within her eyes, right? Like, yeah, it did feel exactly like those performances where you can see kind of wheels turning. You can see her thinking, like even the line when she goes, "You bitch," to Ross or whatever. And they praised her for that. Like Ross is like, "Oh, and you called me a bitch and it was fabulous." They re-showed that clip and I could see again the panic in her eyes when she's thinking about what to say. And she's just like, like there's a little bit of panic before she answers. And it just,
and would they have had the same like amount of critique if she had been like Banji, as she says, when she said that, "Oh, you bitch." Like if it had been more aggressive and loud or whatever.
Yeah.
Would they have been like, "Oh, you, that was so great, Candy." But because she was like, "Oh, you bitch." And it wasn't even Valley Girl.
The thing here that I think is the most frustrating is that clearly this is a playoff of The Simple Life. This is supposed to be Nicole Richie and Paris Hilton. And I didn't get any of that from Candy. I got shades of that from Simone. There were things that Simone did that kind of like made up for not understanding like the reference or whatever. But like, you're supposed to be Paris Hilton, Candy. There's so many things that you could be doing right now. Like you could be talking about the catchphrase that you have coined. That's hot. Like, you know, like you don't have to do that's hot because like, you know, you could say like, "I tried to trademark you bitch" or something like that.
That's tepid.
That's tepid. Oh, I love. But there's so many little things that you can draw inspiration from what you know. Like, and I don't know a lot about Paris Hilton or Nicole Richie, but like, I know what the themes are and I can play off of that.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah, I mean, because that was the name of the show was The Complicated Life, right? So obviously it's supposed to be The Simple Life. And that was not like that. I didn't even get until thinking about it after when I was rereading my notes and I was like, oh, and then Candy releasing a sex tape. Then it kind of like all started to make sense of like, oh, okay, this is what we're trying to go with. But
yeah,
I thought Simone was really funny. She can sing, I guess. That was like pretty impressive at the end with the row, 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 row your boat.
Row, row.
And also, I loved the fact that this skit didn't devolve into just like fighting, right? Which I feel like every
That was pleasant. I did enjoy that part. Yeah,
has a tendency to do that. So,
speaking of devolving into fighting,
speaking of that, which is also inspired by the screenshot that I took here to talk about my 600-pound ass is killing our friendship. Okay, so that's what we're going to go with for this next skit, where we have, of course, Tina and Elliot with two T's here being former NASA employees turned plastic surgeon aficionados, I guess. Because you can't be both.
I didn't know if you know that. You can't be both.
Obviously, you have to. If you're going to get a boob job, you have to leave NASA.
It goes against the gravitational force of the job. Right. You know,
supposed to be studying one kind of orbit here. Take that stuff somewhere else.
Exactly. Oh man. So, all right, Amon, what about this? What about this?
I mean, Tina was good. I mean, we all knew Tina was going to be good. This is the stuff that she does back home. So I really wasn't expecting to be disappointed by her at all. I think that Elliot with two T's, I think that she, I don't think that she was as bad as the judges may have wanted us to believe. I was kind of, I liked the unexpectedness of her, like, you know, being the friend that was trying to quell her other friend's, you know, ass dreams of big assery or whatever. And then she just pops out these big boobs. Like, I thought that was funny. And I thought that, you know, them being secret lesbian lovers, or at least, you know, hiding feelings from one another, I think that was an interesting way to go. And it devolving into like them pretty much having sex on the stage. It made me laugh. I didn't hate this as much as I thought I was going to. I feel like Utica should have been in the bottom, and I feel like Elliot maybe could have survived, or the other way around. Maybe, I don't know. I just feel like Elliot wasn't as bad as I thought she was going to be in this challenge. But I guess, you know, it didn't really end up mattering anyway because she stays. So,
I agree. I think that Tina was fine and funny and such. I'm a big fan in the moment, the first time I watch, of like physical stuff, and then when I think about it afterwards, I'm like, It doesn't have the same effect as like someone who comes up with like a witty response. I feel like you kind of go to this physical, let's just have sex on stage when you don't have anything else to think about.
This was definitely the most slapstick of all of them. Definitely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I will say I completely agree about her boob reveal. The fact she came out with that like little cape, like cover, like cardigan kind of.
Yeah. Like it was working. I did not see
that. I didn't know she had that boob at all. And the way, and it didn't even look like she was holding it so far, the bag, like so far out in front to clearly so, like it felt very normal. Like and then of course you get the edited queens being like, is that her mom? but then they do the reveal and I was like, I actually gasped. I was like, this is completely unexpected.
Yeah. I completely agree. So when she did the reveal, I was like, first of all, foreshadowing Tina, this is how you do a friggin' reveal. Oh my God. Secondly, anyway, but I just felt like in general, Elliot did a passable job. It's going to be hard to go up with Tina. And I'm going to be 100% honest. Like, if Tina had been put in a group that had, I don't know, a little bit more wordsmithing in their improv, I think she would have done even better. And I could have seen Tina like potentially be in the top for her performance. But because this group this pair had to devolve into physical comedy of things that didn't make sense. The only moment that I laughed in the entire thing was when she kind of like hits Elliot's boobs and Elliot goes, wait, do that again. Like, I thought that was funny. but like, I mean, okay, I'm laughing about it now still. But remember how I said I don't laugh about physical comedy?
Yeah.
Like, laughing.
So take that back.
Yeah. But like, I don't know. I just generally felt like this was such a mediocre performance in comparison to the other ones that I think that cost Tina being the top and unfortunately put Elliot in the bottom.
I think it was the reliance on the slapstick, which, you know, I get it's funny. And when you have like big boobs and big butts, of course, you know, you kind of want to like go for something that is more physical. So I do understand that. And they did have some science like space puns. But however, you know, it was pretty limited. The one thing, I wanted Tina's ass bigger.
Yes,
I wanted it bigger. It wasn't big enough for me. I was like, I think I've seen queens just regular with that much padding. Like, it's exaggerated, of course, but I wanted more. If it's my 600 pound ass, that better be a big old honk and badonkadonk, because it was not as big as I needed it to be.
This is just Nina Bonina Brown. Like, yeah. You know, this, I want like a whole couch on your butt. Like,
I needed more. I needed more.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. All right.
More
well,
is always better.
More is always better.
Give me the boot.
Okay. So those are the skits. There's a few little things before we get to the runway and the judging. So, you know, we get a really nice, interesting story about Simone second guessing herself and not wanting to screw up. She talks about the fact that her brother committed armed robbery. And so we get a little bit more to gain insight into Simone. Who is Simone? What motivates her? What is it that drives her? And especially her relationship with her drag character as Simone. And I thought that that was really interesting. Although part of me too, at the same time, was also still thinking like, the winner in it. I couldn't help it. I just couldn't help it.
Yeah, that was interesting. I mean, I can only imagine just the amount of like, the fact that she's still able to be Simone and Simone still exists even in the face of all of that, you know, not wanting to disappoint your mother because your brother went off to prison, on top of like, you know, being in a black household, and all the homophobia that I'm sure comes with that. The fact that she was still able to like thrive within that environment and still get to this point is really, really great to see. I'm glad that her parents and her mom was like, you know, really, really accepting of that. If anything, it feels like her mom was probably like, I don't want to lose two sons to some bullshit. So if Simone is who my son is, then, you know, that's just really, that's great to hear. It was very encouraging.
Definitely agree.
The other story that we get is about Elliot. And, you know, we've seen Elliot be a little bit of the outcast because one, she was voted out of the loser group and then the winner group kind of didn't really accept her. But she talks about and opens up here about that she struggles with clinical depression and feels that she needs to put on a face or put on a mask when she's around people with coronavirus. You should put on a mask, but you know, in the case of Elliot, you know, she doesn't really let people in. And I thought that that was interesting to get to know a little bit more about Elliot And I thought that the way that it was handled in terms of the show editing was good, that Elliot talks about, look, it's a chemical imbalance in my brain. It's an illness. Like, it's the same way when you think of, we think about mental health, we should think of it like a physical illness. Like, you get the flu. If you have the flu, you're not going to go to work. If you're struggling with something like depression, you're going to, yeah, of course, like, you need time off. You need to get well and take care of yourself. So I was happy with the way that it was addressed on the show. So, you know, the inclusion of that moment, I thought was really great.
And with Tina also talking about having a mother who yes. was clinically depressed and the effects that mental health can have on other people who are close as well, because mental health is not just a solo battle. Sometimes it can absolutely affect mm-hmm. those around you and the relationships you have with other people. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a super important conversation to have, specifically while mental health and mental illness is on the rise. Especially in quarantine, I think it's always important to remember that, like, if you are suffering from any kind of mental health issue, we need to get rid of the stigma that it's not okay to get help. I think that is slowly going away, and you are worth something and you are valuable, and it's no different than having diabetes and needing insulin. You need to be able mm-hmm. to find the sources of help that work for you. Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, in Drag Race fashion, we have a Maury discussion / reenactment, complete with baby, cameraman, boom operator, and Lala Ri again running around losing her shit without any clothes on. So
I was like, where's that Lala Ri in the challenges? I want to know. Like, that to me was the funniest part of the episode, which is sad.
That was the challenge. Workroom has been getting a lot of Lala reaction.
Yeah. I have a feeling like it's the performance anxiety, because you can tell, yes. I mean, even in confessionals, and she's hilarious. Like, that's more of the person I want. I think she just kind of freezes up and, mm-hmm. and that's why she probably struggles a little bit. Okay. So let's jump on into the runway. Now this week, the theme was beads, I think.
Yep.
Yes. Okay.
Beat it.
Beat it. And T.S. Madison was a judge this week. We haven't been talking about the judges because we've had a little bit of repeats, but we had everybody say love Lonnie love, but T.S. Madison was here this week, which I was so happy to see her included, and really wonderful to have all of the insight from T.S. Madison. So let's jump on in to the first look, which is Miss Denali, who comes out as a freaking chandelier. Mm-hmm. I thought this was absolutely gorgeous. Totally absolutely agree. Gorgeous.
Yeah, and so is she. She was really pissed off about this. I was like, it sucks that, like, your favorite look is worn on the week that's going to piss you off the most in the competition. She was mm-hmm. so butthurt that this did not get, like, those judges screwed her over, like, in her mind. She is not happy. I think she looks something like out of, you know, Beauty and the Beast, you know, Enchanted Castle. Here she comes, you know, just, you know, cast her in the next Broadway revival, because this is definitely it. I enjoy it. It's got shape. It's got form. It's got, you know, drama to it. I like it. I mm-hmm. like it. I hope that this really isn't her best drag, though, because, girl, it's episode 7. You got like 5 more episodes.
And the finale dress ready to go.
And the finale. Yeah. So.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they don't know, obviously, right? Like, the order. So, of course, like, they cannot predict it. But yeah, when she said that in Undocked, I was like, oh, don't tell me that.
You know, I didn't feel as like, about it, like, in terms of like, oh, I hope you have other stuff. Because I feel like she's been killing it on the runway every week. I understand her frustration. I feel like she should have been in the top either this week or last week, potentially both weeks. And she hasn't been getting the criticism. The last time she got criticism was when she was in the bottom 2, and she was wearing that really cool, like, bird outfit. So I understand the frustration she must have, where she's killing it, and then someone like Candy is, like, getting in the top when she's so consistently, like, providing the.
We all thought it was going to be Rosé to get the Jan at it, right? So it looks like Rosé was a bit of a red herring, or a pink herring, because it's, you
know, pink rose. Herring, a rose herring, a rose herring,
and it looks like Denali is the one that is going to be getting that. Yeah. Unfortunately,
the only thing I will say about this is I wish there was more beading, like almost like a beaded train or something on the bottom of the dress, because it just kind of stops, and it's, I understand it's a weird shape in terms of, like,
where the hips are. Coming down from, like, the little ring, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Like, even if it was, like, almost like a, like, you had them kind of come in, but then you had some that, like, were free-falling as well. Mm-hmm. Just something that kind of moved and swayed a little bit, because chandeliers don't stay, like, still. When you look at them, sometimes, like, you always have that classic, if something is, like, an earthquake is happening, you always, it always goes to the chandelier and a glass of water, but the chandelier will move. And so I just wanted something that would just kind of, like, flow a little bit, that would give her, like, even if she did, like, a, if she could do, like, a little twirl, would just add another kind of illusion to it. But this is gorgeous. And I have to say, her makeup has gotten better and better and better every single week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the she doesn't have that super, super dark, harsh contour. I mean, she does a little bit, but it's definitely not as intense as it's been. And I love this. I love this look. I love her. I love her so much. And the beads are the centerpiece, right? And that is, I think, super important, because that's the theme of the runway. All right. Well, her scene partner, Rosé, is up next. And this took me a long time to look at it, to figure out exactly what was going on. The more I looked at it, the more I loved it. Amon, what did you think about Rosé's look this week?
My feet hurt, because my sister would wear these beads in her hair all the time, and the bead end up on the floor and I would step on them. So I just feel pain when looking at this dress. But it's a wonderful dress. I think it's, like, beautifully constructed. I mean, obviously it's meticulous, right? Like, you have to put each and every single bead in its right position to make, to, you know, see those patterns and those colors and everything. I like the energy that she had walking out. It's very, you know, walking art piece. And I love drag race looks like that. So yeah, this was fun. It was definitely, it was campy. It was fun. It was great. I like this look a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I liked it. I thought this was a cool concept. It was fine. It just reminded me a lot of, like, in, like, elementary school, when you would make some kind of, like, glue some beads on some construction paper, but, like, make it fashion. So that's why I thought it was kind of cute. I wish she had had, like, a different hair to go with it. Something that was, like, even if it was, like, pigtails or not pigtails. Ooh, yeah,
pigtails would have been nice.
Oh, yeah, like, pigtails. Gosh. I was going
for Tinkerbell, right?
Yeah,
yeah, and I didn't get Tinkerbell at all from this. Like, just the shape a little bit, sure, but
so because the hair is definitely Tinkerbell. I think it was. I think because of the patterning, then takes you away from Tinkerbell. Right. Like, if she had actually wanted to go for Tinkerbell, because the shape absolutely looks that way, then do it with mostly green colors, but also, like, getting those beads in, like, different shades of green is very challenging. As someone who also did a lot of arts and crafts with these beads. So I love the detailing, and knowing the fact that it's completely made out of beads just blows me away. Like, that's amazing. And it fits her so well. It's gorgeous. I actually really, really, this is walking art.
A little bead wand. That would have, like, really
Okay.
But that's exactly it. Like, there's little things that she could have done to accessorize it, or how she walked on that. Like, if she just done, like, a little, like, ding, or whatever, like, some of the little things that Tinkerbell does would have been really kind of cute, but.
I think she does a little bit of it, like the pose that posed the end of the runway. But but the color, it took her explanation and then, like, a little bit for me to completely get it. But at the same time, I think this is really pretty.
Yeah, I think she just went for yellow because it's easier to see the colors of the beads and such, versus green would be harder.
Well, and that's the thing, is that the patterning stands out, and the patterning itself is gorgeous. It's just sort of like merging two worlds that kind of don't quite 100% go together.
Exactly.
Okay, Miss La La Ree coming out here. I tried to find a good close-up of her makeup. I couldn't find a good one. But anyway, so this is what we are here with. She does a very Mardi Gras-inspired outfit, Beth. What do you think about La La's look?
I thought it looked cute on her. This is one of the few times that she, for me, I don't think that she has been great on the runway. And I feel like this is one of the few times she's worn something that does look like it's more fitted for her. I loved how the beads moved and all that kind of stuff. I loved the hair with this. I wish there was more beading in the hair or something to tie it together with the outfit. But other than that, I mean, this was a safe look. I thought she looked great. And I loved there's, like, some beading on the small of her back that was really gorgeous, too, in the back.
Amon, what do you think?
Yeah, I wish there was just a little bit more movement. Yeah. I don't know if that requires more beads or just like the better placement as to where the beads are. But I definitely liked it. I mean, I especially when she turned around, and I agree, Beth, like around the small of her back was really, really, really cool to look at. But yeah, I just needed just a little bit more like frisk to really pull it together.
I think so. I mean, as someone who lived in New Orleans for a while, if she had had a big headpiece, I could have easily seen her in the parades. I mean, even as she is, she could have gone out and been in the parades, but a big headpiece just really would have tied the whole thing together and made it so Mardi Gras and just really would have made that feel. So that's really my biggest critique here. I do think that she presented the outfit well, and I loved the movement when we did get it. Like when she's leaving, there's one specific moment she's leaving the runway and she like shakes her butt, like moves her legs and shakes her butt in a way, makes the bottom piece move in such a cool way. I know that's, I'm like seeing her butt cheeks move and like seeing the little beads move. So that I thought was really fun. But yeah, I hear what you guys are saying about almost wanting, there needs, it's something is missing, just more. Mm-hmm.
You know what it is? I wish she had painted on a Venetian mask or something like that. Like,
or something like that. Yeah.
Something that would have been like, cause it, from the top up, she just, there's like, her face is beautiful and her hair is beautiful, but it doesn't really tie into the outfit. Right. But that would have just elevated it so much.
Yeah, I think it would have been that just little extra pop that would have helped. But yeah, I'm with you. I mean, her looks on the runway, I think, have been fine, but haven't like sort of blown me out of the water. And I think this is one that sort of fits with that.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Okay, let's move on to the next group of queens. And we have, of course, Gottmik, who this week chose the anal option. Alon, what do you think about the anal bead inspired look from Gottmik this week?
Ooh la la. And ouch, because I don't know what person is digging those up there, because those look mighty big. But yeah, they did. This is fun. It's a little, avant-garde, a little provocative, definitely takes you to a place. Yeah. So I enjoy this. I enjoy this a lot.
Mm-hmm. And her makeup is stunning, Beth. Mm-hmm. Let's go back. Let's look at Lala. Don't get me wrong. Gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Fabulous. But it's a little bit of a,
expected.
Yeah, it's an expected mug. Yeah. It's gorgeous. It's fabulous. Like, especially if you are running late for, I don't know. Like, I could see this day to day. But when you're on Drag Race, you're presenting a look, you're really trying to elevate yourself and stand out. I think Gottmik's makeup here really helps her in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love this, like, 60s mod almost inspired look, like, combined with anal beads and just the color red and the latex, and it's like sex, but without being sexy. Like it's interesting. It's a really, it makes you think, but you also know exactly what it is from the get-go. I think this is a really cool concept. And I love, and it took me a while to really understand like what the contouring on her face was. And this is supposed to be like another bead kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I never thought of that like that, but I love that she made her contour fit that from her eye makeup. Like that's just such a unique thing, and someone who is a makeup artist like her would think to do something like that, because clearly she knows the mapping of her face. But yeah, I think this wasn't my absolute favorite look on the runway, but it was one of the cooler concepts and executions that we saw.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I and especially when you're gonna go beads, like, oh okay, yeah, it's drag, let's do some anal beads.
why not.
All right. Olivia Lux is up next on the runway. And oh my gosh, when I was a kid, these little beads in her hair, the baubles, I had so many of these. So as soon as she walked out, I was just like, I was like, oh my God, this is childhood. It just stood out to me. I really loved this. And I thought she just also presented it really well. I know that you could say like, oh, well, it's really simple and like, really, where are the beads? But the hair piece is the centerpiece. Like, it's covered in the beads. It's nostalgic. I don't know. For me, Aman, I just felt like this was really cute.
So I have an issue with this look.
Uh-oh.
Where are the beads? Like, I never called those things in her hair beads, because my sister would wear those too, and we called them bollies. Mm. And beads were always the smaller ones, or the beads could be big too, that, you know, that you would put your hair through. But these bollies were something that you would tie your hair with. Yeah. And so to me, I'm always like, I don't necessarily call them beads. I mean, I guess technically they still are beads, but my mind is just like, think is going straight to Bali. And the fact that there's nothing else on the outfit, I'm like, where is it? And the fact that we've seen this hair before, because I'm pretty sure that's Candy's wig. Candy wore this during the bag ball with the
Candy
with
wore the, something very similar to
oh.
it. But I think Candy actually had big beads and not the bollies like in no, her
I think,
hair.
I think this is the exact same wig, and I think probably what happened. Well, it might not be Candy's. It could be Olivia's, and Olivia let Candy borrow it for that look. Because yeah. I could see her, you know, wearing the book bags and being like, I don't really have hair that goes with this. And then she's like, oh, can I borrow this look? And then she takes it from Olivia. But now where this fails for me with Olivia, like, is if you gave that to Candy knowing that you were going to wear this for the beads.
Oh, girl, you're so right. Look at that.
Her hair.
Yeah. It's the same hair.
You're right.
Oh, my God. I didn't even notice. Oh, wait.
They have different colors.
No, they're different colors. They're like the baubles are different colors.
But you know what?
No, I don't know.
They got them from the same person. Yeah,
yeah, that's exactly what my thought went to, though, Aman, is that this is like the second week where Olivia has done something that a queen has already done on the runway, especially when it is like the centerpiece of it. So she did the boxer outfit after Simone did the exact same boxer outfit. Now she's mm-hmm. doing the hair, where the hair is supposed to be the centerpiece of this particular theme, but someone else has already worn the hair. Like, it's ridiculous. She does have a couple of beads on her sneakers, and you can see that there is some kind of like little sequin beads or whatever yeah. on like her dress, but that's not drag enough for you to like, that's not where your attention goes to. It goes to the hair first, which is great. I love the cultural mm-hmm. reference that she's providing. I love yeah. this outfit. It's super cute.
It's
but for
beautiful.
Me,
I love it.
Doesn't say beads.
Yeah.
You know?
No, it's so cute. And like, I mean, it was hard for me to like frown at this because she looks so cute, but it's like, yeah. I feel like if anything, she really should have lost points. Like if she were, I mean, she won the challenge this week. If I were RuPaul, I'd have been like, ooh, you had me. And so this girl, like, what's going on? Like, it's kind of, she's kind of giving me like the Aquaria cracker edit with all of these looks that she's taking. But because she's so nice, it's so sweet, no one says anything about her. But
just kind of let it go.
Yeah. I like the fact that she has, that she's wearing stockings though.
Yeah.
And she has band-aids over the stockings. I think that's just so cute and clever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was super cute. I loved how she acted on the runway and where she was.
Yeah, the beaded jump rope. I don't know. Like, there's like so many little things for me that make me really love this. But yeah, I get what you guys are saying, especially because when we see this, like if you saw this outfit and you had to guess the category, no one's going to think beads first, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. So they're going to be like, oh,
are we missing something? Maybe are there beads on the skirt or something?
I don't think so.
There's a couple beads on like skyscrapers and such.
Here?
Like there's the beaded jump rope, and then there's some beads on her sneakers.
That's Utica. Yeah, the beaded jump rope. I don't know. That's what she said, especially in her voiceover too. It was like she got the beads in her hair and beaded jump rope. So
all right, whatever. We'll give it to her because it's Olivia. Somebody else.
You see that smile and you just can't help but forgive her. Okay, the next queen to walk the runway is Utica, and Utica comes out in the Bloody Bride ensemble here, Beth. What did you think about Utica?
So I love this look. But again, not for this runway. While there are clearly beads, and I actually stumbled upon a TikTok of her friend who made this look and like hand did all the beads, like of her making it. She was like, that time where you spent quarantine putting together something that you weren't supposed to tell literally anybody about. And like for a friend, and then, you know, showed this up on the stage. So that's kind of cool to see that. But I don't like it for this, because for me, this is more the beads aren't the star again. I love that there are beads to it. I love this deconstructed zombie bride kind of look. And I love that this is so outside the box, which is on brand for Utica. But for me, it's not in fitting with the theme. Like, yeah, there's beads on it. But I'm not going to look at this and go, oh, beaded runway. Okay, great.
Right. And I think, was it in Untucked? Where did I see it? Are pearls beads? Also a discussion to go to the, are baubles bead? Like, you know, right? Good so talk, it's like,
And yeah, it's definitely opening my mind to the diversity of beadery.
Beads.
For sure.
Beadery. I think this is gorgeous. I love the outfit, except for the red thing underneath. I don't quite get, because I thought the red was just supposed to be the blood. So if you're going with the theme of the, like, how did it get underneath without whatever? Super, super minor detail. Maybe she needed to do it to make sure that the white stuff on top stood out. Fine, whatever. But again, yeah, I it's gorgeous. I love this. I love that she was able to present it in a runway that's still campy, but not the kind of goofy campy mouth open. This is like the evil campy mouth open. And I think that is at least a little bit diversity for Utica. But I ultimately think she was saved with this runway.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
Like, this is why she wasn't ultimately in the bottom.
Yep.
Okay. Let's keep on chugging. And Miss Candymuse is up next. I really tried to find a good still of Candy here. This one of her standing like a Sims character without anything to do is the best one I could find. So that's what we're going with. Like, genuinely no posing, no nothing. I get that she's going for now this completely demure character thing, but it just didn't exactly translate.
Can we please Photoshop a plumb bob on top of her head? Just like...
That's what it was.
So good.
Let's be real.
Oh, goodness.
All right. So, Amon, what about this? What about this for Candy?
So, look, I mean, I've talked on this podcast before a few seasons back with you and Mike and Brent about how I never really know how to critique the bigger queens that come on the show, because a lot of the time they end up wearing a lot of the same thing. And that's because fashion isn't always kind to bigger people, so you don't really get a lot of diversity when it comes to the looks. Now, with that being said, some time has passed, and I feel like people are a lot more conscientious about, I mean, there's still a long way to go, but I feel like people are a lot more conscientious about, you know, catering to different body types. And so I am so glad that Candy seems to be at a point in time on this show where there are designers that are reaching out to bigger queens to give them the looks that we usually wouldn't see from them maybe five seasons prior. I think that she looks stunning. I love the look. I love the fact that the beads are cascading out of the hair hat that she's got going on. I love the fact that it's also very sexy and sexual, and she's got beaded nipples. I think that's great. Now, would I have showered Candy in all of the compliments that the judges gave her over this look as if it was the best thing that she's ever done? I don't know. I feel like the fur really drags the beadery out of it for me. Like, if you had found a shawl that was all beads instead, I mean, that might have been painful. You might have been scratching your back up and down the runway, but I would have loved that so much more than the fur. But I think that she looks absolutely stunning. I'm glad that she got the validation that she wanted this week. It was really touching for me to see her sort of, you know, get really emotional on the stage. And I like the fact that she's getting, and this is why I'm not all the way out on Candy. This is why I feel like there is a path to victory for her, because, I mean, no, I don't think that she really did that well in the challenge, but obviously the producers love her. They don't want her going anytime soon. And the fact that they are showing this progression, and now her story arc in this episode was, look at, this is what can happen when a queen takes what the judges say and applies it to the challenge and applies it to the runway. And so I feel like there's an upward trajectory that we're going to see from her. And so I'm excited for her. to see what happens next.
I mean, Candy's based on the edit, Candy's in it for the long haul. So, where this will end, will she make it to the final? Is she going to be dropped right before? I don't know, but it's the editors are investing in her as a character. She's a narrator. She's been through a lot. We even after the Tamisha Amon stuff is over, we still get a ton of Candy in this episode, which I think just goes to show how much they've invested in her in the show.
Yeah, I totally agree with everything that Amon has said here. And I agree with you, Liana. I don't think that we're going to see Candy go anytime soon. If she does go like next week, that would be the best red herring RuPaul's Drag Race has ever done for editing I've ever seen. But I will say that, again, I wish she didn't have the fur to a certain extent, because I get more of,
or if
like,
it was just a little smaller and not as, you know, hefty.
Or if she had dropped it, just drop it, like come down the runway with your fur and then show off your beads.
Drag it on the ground. Yes, exactly. Because there's a sexy way to do that. I think she looks gorgeous. And I love big people who embrace how fucking fierce and beautiful they are. Because if there's one thing I have struggled with in my life, has been acceptance of my body, which is curvier, bigger, and carries weight in places that most women don't. And Drag Race has been the thing that has allowed me to like better love myself, because I've seen queens like Roxy Andrews come out here and be super effing sexy as she's curvy. And I love a look like this from Candy Muse, because you are proving that bigger people are sexy and beautiful and deserve to be celebrated, period. In terms of this outfit in general, I think it's gorgeous. I think she carries it off well. She knows she's fucking beautiful. On top of that, though, I will say the fur just takes away from the beatery, as we're going to call it. That's what I wonder is, like, if they had put her in the bottom three, would they have loved the outfit as much? Because there's like exactly what you said for everything that they, that's what I asked myself, like, if this queen was in the top or the bottom, what are the judges going to say? Because we have to remember that this is a show that is produced and edited heavily. So I almost wonder sometimes if the other judges know if the queens are in the top and the bottom until like RuPaul makes the decision.
Or the way they edit it. I'm telling you, Olivia got critiques on her little black dress from last week or whatever, however many weeks ago, because there were no comments about her black dress at all whatsoever in the edited show. Oh, it was about the hair, and that was it. So,
like, oh, we love your hair, even though your dress was awful.
But that part was edited out so that we, as the show viewers, don't see it. So it could be that, or it's just the editing of everything. I don't know. But I mean, for me, look, I'm all about the titties here. I love the little tassels. They're so cute.
It's very
titillating. I'm all about it. It's such
titillating!
Just piques my interest. Fabulous. And the hat, of course, is, you know, the centerpiece here. I think it really is. You just can't help but stare at it. And you can still see her gorgeous makeup the way she presented it. It's just, this is really beautiful. The thing about the coat, only minor critiques here. Yeah. All right, let's talk about Simone, and let's talk about this look, because holy shirking F-balls. Like, yes, the panelists are dancing, and I feel the exact same way. Amon, kick us off.
Come on.
Yeah.
African warrior princess. Come on. Give it to me. Give it to me. Give me all the beads. Give it to me. Give me the shimmering body. Give me the legs. Give me the lips. Give me the face. Give me those earrings. Give me the fact that someone painstakingly spelled her name out in beads in the hair. Give it all to me. Give it all to me. I would wear this to work. I would wear this in 30 degree weather. I would wear this to bed. I would wear this to the grocery store. I'd wear it to a funeral. Give it to me all the time. That's all I'm
doing. I would wear this to an IRS audit. I would wear this. No, Amon, the fact that, first of all, I didn't even know that you were also dancing. So the fact that we both had that very, you know, response, I have not felt this way about an outfit in so long. Like, I literally just now got goosebumps again looking at it. This is so beautifully done. It's so artfully crafted. It is absolutely stunning. And then she turned around and it said Simone in the head. And I literally was like, it says Simone. Do you see that?
There is something about a queen spelling her name and you only see it when they turn around on Drag Race. It just forever will send us to the heights. You're just like, oh my God, she spelled her name.
Do you think that this is how people felt the first time like an athlete wore their last name in the back of a jersey? Were they like, oh my God,
that's why they do it. Oh my God. Oh my gosh. We figured out sports. Look at us. Mm-hmm. For me, the reveal too, you can't even tell at all, but it's so clear in the back when you see it like that. Mm-hmm. That is some magic. It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And this, so to me, this outfit and Rosé's are very similar in the sense that you have this sort of beaded design of the laying them down, gluing them together and sticking them on. But the difference between Simone's and Rosé's for me is that Simone's had a super clear Zulu warrior Glamazonian reference that was just a little missed with Rosé's. I think they're both equally gorgeous, but the fact that Simone came out like this with then the added thing with the hair just really nails it for me. I mean, I thought when Simone walked out, I was like, oh, Simone's gonna win the challenge.
I thought the same thing.
I was actually shocked when she didn't win.
I'm gonna be honest too, and I love Olivia. I thought she did a great job as a mime, but when we sit back and we have a whole 5-minute conversation as to is this beaded or not, and then this is what we're presented with, and we also know Simone crushed the challenge. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I think
come on, Deborah.
This is 100% a miss from the judges for me. This should have been Simone's week to win again.
I think so too.
I mean, we don't want this to be a runaway for Simone, but yeah, like when stuff like this happens, it's like, well, damn, like, I gotta give it to her.
Oh my God. My conspiracy theory brain was going off. I was like, okay, so they want to set up Olivia as the only challenger to Simone because we all know Simone is going to win. So we can't give Simone the win. You know what I mean? Like, I'm gaming the, like, what are the producers thinking? Because yes, again, like Olivia did great. Like, but Simone also did fabulous plus this. So, Anyway, I still think about this.
Beautiful.
But also, like, how cool of a name to have spelled out. Like, it would be so stupid to have Beth. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you can't have beads in your hair and be called Beth.
What's the worst name? Obviously, Karen. You know, you got like Karen in the back. Roger maybe could be not so great.
I love the idea that someone, Beverly.
Beverly.
Linda.
Miss Beverly. Yeah, exactly. Right. Some of them just don't have the same sticking power, I think, as Simone. Yeah. All right. Well,
next. Okay. This pissed me off.
I don't have any boobies, but I had to include the reveal. I'm sorry, the reveal thing that happened here. And then, of course, her makeup and hair.
First of all, did a 5-year-old smear your makeup on with their thumb? Because it looks horrible. Secondly, in what world was this a better look than when those stupid ass pants were on? This was horrible all the way around. I understand you're going for a Harlequin, like Mardi Gras kind of look, but this was just...
Put the pants back on.
Secondly, if you're going to do beads and all the beads are on your tits, a little bit of the fringe on like your cuffs and the skirt and like your, like, no. Stop. Next. I'm so mad at this. Like,
oh, really? Oh, we couldn't tell how you felt. Right, thanks for how clarifying.
I love it.
Just such delusion. I can't believe she thought that she was going to win this week. I was like, she didn't do bad in the challenge. So I can understand based off of the challenge, but like, sometimes I'm like, do these queens not see what the other queens are going to wear beforehand? Like, are they not all lined up in the workroom before they hit the main stage? Because you thinking that you're going to win over people like Simone or even Denali, like, girl, like, I mean, yeah, there are definitely beads here. There are definitely more beads on this outfit than some others. So I will give it to you there. But it's just, Tina, it's just so costumey, girl. Like, and I don't want to, I don't have anything against costume queens. I think if I were a queen, I'd probably be more in the costume mm-hmm. realm than like pageantry or glamour or something like that, that or concept art. I'd probably be more of a costume person myself because I love Halloween is my favorite holiday. I love costumes, but it's Drag Race. It's Drag Race. You have to have something that is, especially when you keep wearing costume-esque things on the runway, like, and your best drag so far look on the runway was a costume. Like, your Tin Man thing was the best thing that you've done so far. And that was a costume. I just, girl, you need something else. You need to inject something else into your looks because it's just not giving it to me. It's just not.
Mm-hmm. Also, you're doing Mardi Gras. Why does your face look like it's like so serious at a funeral?
That's why I got these screenshots, because she just looked like she was constipated and trying to hold it in the whole time.
I mean,
goodness.
Listen, you have enough at Mardi Gras that might happen, but at the very least, look like you're drunk too. I don't know.
Put the pants back on. Why did you take your pants off? What is a skirt for?
There was nothing there.
I don't know.
To show the little beads on the skirt. Like, that was it. The reveal for those little beads.
Right. At least it's not red, orange, and yellow. Now there's yellow. There's a little bit of gold in there.
There's also red. A
wig. I know. But at least there's some green and some purple.
Remember last week and I was like, what if she came out in green, purple, and blue?
She merged the two ideas, just brought them all together. The wig is thirsty. I hate the makeup. I'm sorry. It's not doing it for me. I feel bad, but also I don't. So
she can take it.
Here we are. Yeah, she can take it. Sorry, Tina. All right. Last queen that we have to talk about is Elliot with two T's, who goes for this flapper bead look. So as someone who has been to Mardi Gras and someone who has worn like pounds of beads, they are quite heavy. So I love the fact that she was able to still be able to do this outfit, make it look very slim fitting with the beads. Like, it's well constructed. It's very gorgeous. However, at the same time, like, it is a little bit, you know, I don't know, like, maybe she needs that coat that then she tears off, and then it, like, just one extra little thing. But overall, like, I actually think this is quite gorgeous.
I totally agree.
Definitely, it hits all the marks, right? Like, it's mm-hmm. it's definitely well fit, and the fact that she was able to do that with beads, or the designer, because we don't know if she did it or not. But the fact that it looks that good and that well constructed, yeah, definitely kudos to there. But yeah, it is very like, okay, yeah, like you did it, girl, you did it, and like she definitely, like, her look was definitely one of the better ones, because like we said, there are. Looks that are on the stage that are like, where are the beads? Mm-hmm. Some of them just don't fit very well. This is definitely a better look than I think than Olivia's and Lala's, in my opinion. So mm-hmm. kudos to her there. But it's still sort of like, not, there's no zhuzh to it, you know?
So my whole thing was that while Tina was a stronger partner out of the two of them, Tina should be in her place in the bottom here. Like,
we need that great outfit.
Like, but here's the thing. Like, honestly, like, where's mm-hmm. the line here, RuPaul? Like, Elliot mm-hmm. has an actual concept look. It looks great. And she used actual beads as the focus and the main material of the outfit. It looks gorgeous. She's pulling it off. Mm-hmm. Fine. Tina mm-hmm. didn't do a big enough ass. Basically, all she did was shove her ass in Ross's face and then on top of Elliot's face. Like, that's all she did in the challenge. And then comes out like a clown rag doll that a five-year-old has ripped the pants off of. So you have to do a little bit of beating on the bottom. Like, it's so bad. Why is Elliot in the bottom over Tina?
Tina's outfit is like that creepy toy that's in your grandparents' basement that they make you take out for decoration on Mardi Gras. Like, that's yes. what this is. It's creepy and I hate it.
But this is gorgeous.
I really hate it.
Oh my gosh. I'm so happy because I heard someone be like, I really liked the reveal. And I was like, you need to go to an optometrist.
Get your eyes checked.
What is wrong with it? No, I think Elliot looks beautiful here. I don't think she had the strongest performance. In my opinion, in terms of performance and look, Tina should have been in the bottom over Elliot. But I think that, again, the producers really like this trio of Gottmik, mm-hmm. Tina, and Candy. So
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So that wraps up our runway discussion. And we end up with the judging where Denali, Rosé, Gottmik, and Tina are all declared safe. The top ends up being Olivia, Candy, and Simone. And the bottom is Lala, Elliot, and Utica. I think we've all kind of given our overall thoughts on this. And then, of course, Olivia ends up as our winner, which Simone, it's fine. And then in the bottom, we had Lala and Elliot. As we discussed, I probably think Utica should have been there. I mean, I get that her outfit is the reason why she was saved. And so that I get. But her performance, I just felt, was so bad in the improv challenge that mm-hmm. it doesn't. And there's always a constant discussion of the judging of like, okay, so is it, you know, challenge plus runway, challenge times runway,
divided by runway.
Right.
Carry the so, one.
Exactly. So, but anyway, I mean, that's most likely why we ended up with Lala and Elliot in the bottom mm-hmm. two, which they get to lip sync to Whole Lotta Woman by Kelly yeah. Clarkson.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes, I mean, come on.
I mean, Elliot did what she had to do. I felt like it sort of felt like Lala was really giving me resigned energy because I feel like we've seen her go much harder than usual. I just felt like she just, I mean, she said as much when she went out. Like, I just felt like I couldn't find that missing piece the judges were asking for. I don't know what I'm doing wrong. And I just felt like she was just ready to just go. Mm-hmm. So Elliot definitely deserved to stay. She turned it out. Yeah, mm-hmm. I was sad to see her go. It sucks to see mother and daughter leave back to back, you know, but nope. She didn't really leave them much of a choice. She just wasn't giving it to them the way that she usually does.
Mm-hmm. And I just one more thing to touch on, too, because it was brought to our attention with Elliot, that apparently Elliot off camera was making some pretty racially motivated comments, more in a microaggressive kind of way, where mm-hmm. she called Simone's do-rag look ratchet. She called Candy ghetto. We also saw footage of her on a pre-season interview with Jada Essence Hall and a few others. I think, I don't even know which queen she was referring to. Was it Simone? But she was talking to somebody and saying that she is Black Girl Magic, but she's not aggressive about it, which of course is bringing in the stereotypes here. So, and she has yet to really take ownership and apologize for mm-hmm. any of that or take responsibility. And I think that, you know, obviously you need to be able to be accountable and show the ways that you're learning and moving forward. And if you're not willing to do that and your bare minimum apology was more of a defense of what you meant to say, then that's not enough. So I just wanted mm-hmm. to take a moment to say to those that brought this to our attention, like, we hear you. We did some looking, we looked into it, and we're totally agree that, you know, it's specifically it's not my job as a white person to accept an apology anyway, but like to put it out there, like, girl, you need to like take ownership over this.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, and
Candy aired her out. Like, Candy let her know, because I mean, it was the week that Candy, you know, was getting all that hate about, you know, oh, being able to dish it but not take it. And she's like, well, you guys didn't see the stuff that Elliot was actually saying. That didn't come out of nowhere. I wasn't just saying that to be mean. She was saying some pretty weird things to us. And I told her to read the room, which I feel like is a really, really polite way to say, bitch, don't say racist stuff. Like, mm-hmm. read the room. Yeah. Like, no, don't read the room. Like, don't be racist, you know? So she really should say something if she hasn't already. Like, don't let this pandemic fool you, girl. Just because you don't necessarily have to be out and about in the streets doesn't mean that you are not going to have to show your face again. Like,
correct.
Come on.
And these are the types of things that really frustrate me. So when we started hearing about like the things that Elliot was actually saying that they weren't airing, like these are the subtle forms of racism, these microaggressions that really mm-hmm. now need to be dealt with. Like, we're getting mm-hmm. over the macro forms of course, we have so many issues with systemic racism, of course. But mm-hmm. these little micro comments, these are the things that really need to be addressed. And I wish the show had the balls to do it because, and the thing is too, is that you can still, these things are not black and white. So yes, you can show the thing with Elliot struggling with depression, but you can also tackle the microaggressions. And in fact, you need to do both because people are, you can't just label people as 100% good, 100% evil. That's like not a thing.
Mm-hmm. And on top of that too, I mean, what a wonderful way for a white ally, in this case, it should have been Tina, to wall that into the conversation. Well, here's another reason why you might be feeling like an outsider. And here's some of the comments that you're making. These are racist comments. I know that that may not even be your intention, but we need to deconstruct this a little bit and have you think about some of the ways that you can say what you mean without saying it in a way that is comes from a systemic form of racism. And that's where white people need to step up and be actively anti-racist. It is not the job of POC. It is not the job of Candy to be the one to just expose. And the only reason why Candy had to is because people were coming for her.
Yeah.
And let's also think about that. Are we only coming after queens of color when they make comments and such, or are we going after white queens just as easily? In this instance, we need to be vocal and say, hey, Elliot, you need to take accountability. And here are the things that you were saying. This is where they come from. This is why it's not okay. And it is our job as white allies to do the education there.
Mm-hmm. And like Leona said, like, it's not like anybody is like irredeemable. I mean, I definitely think that, you know, every case is different. I think there are people that are on one side of the spectrum and there are people that are on the other side of the spectrum. And there are people that, you know, kind of get lost in the middle. And the fact that Candy and the rest of the girls really hadn't even been vocal about the stuff that Elliot had been saying up until that point leads me to believe that they all have, you know, they since the show has ended, because the show stopped filming months and months ago, they probably all have, you know, since gotten over those things. They've had conversations, you know, amongst themselves and have progressed forward as much as they can. But the fact that, like, because she felt compelled, she had to say something because people are attacking her because of something that she said to her. It's like, yeah, like, no one is beyond redemption. I'm sure, I don't think that Candy meant to do it to be like, this racist bitch over here, like, you know, she just said it because y'all were coming after her. So, yeah, I mean, if anything, Elliot, own up to your shit and be like, yeah, you know what? I said those things. That was effed up of me to say. I'm dealing with that. I'm learning as to why those things were effed up, and it is what it is. On the other hand, I will say, don't say that shit if you don't mean it, because a lot of people will just apologize because they feel compelled to apologize, and it's like, well, would you have apologized had we not gotten pissed off, or if you weren't making money, or this, that, and the third? Mm-hmm. So if Elliot doesn't ever apologize, you know what? Fine, just be prepared to never get any opportunities or whatever have you. But I mean, if you've actually learned, and you want to show that you have, you should address it.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, so we'll keep tabs on that and see how that saga goes. There was also a little bit of drama with Nina Bonina Brown, and by a little bit of drama, I mean a whole lot of drama, whom she made some comments about, I think, got mixed body and trans bodies, and just unacceptable comments. And really, a lot of the queens came out completely disappointed in what happened. So
just stop commenting on the genitalia.
Nina Bonina Brown has also been taking to Twitch and using that as her new platform. And she's done nothing but spread negativity and hate to other drag queens who are that they've been there for a while. And specifically thinking of my friend and fellow content creator, London Bradshaw, who's amazing. You should all check her out on Twitch. And it's just, if you can't use your platform to lift up other people, then why do you even want a platform at this point? And I know that this is somebody that so many of us have taken the time to really defend, and yet going to still have a lot of ugliness and spread that around. Like, that's not cool. And we're not here for it. So
exactly. All right. So that pretty much wraps up everything from Drag Race US that we have to talk about. Next week, we're going to get some sort of, social media, the Rusical, where it seems like each of the queens are maybe going to be playing different types of social media. Also, Anne Hathaway is there in video form for some reason, which I hope will become explained, because that was unclear to me.
Yeah, they didn't show the celebrity guest judge, did they? Did they?
Oh, do you think she's going to be the celebrity guest judge, but from afar?
I'm guessing, because that's a baby show.
Maybe
if they do a Sam from BB20 robot screen thing at, like, behind the judges table, I'm gonna fucking live. It would be so good.
I would lose my. That would be a wild.
I mean, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure they didn't show any.
I think you're right. I think you're right, Amon. And it was really unclear why she. But I feel like she was there at the beginning. But then I was like, are you there?
Yeah.
To help with the musical? I don't know. Well, anyway, all the secrets will be unveiled next week when we talk about social media musical. Okay, it's Drag Race UK time, guys. I don't even know where to begin with Drag Race UK because, okay, let's just give an overall summary of the episode. Okay. Pandemic happens. Queens go home. 7 months later, queens come back. Apparently, Veronica Green had tested positive for COVID. So Veronica Green will not be continuing in the competition. So the queens get to vote back in one of the other eliminated queens, except for Ginny Lemon, because she eliminated herself. And RuPaul is also wearing a Ginny Lemon wig because of trauma from Ginny Lemon. I don't quite understand that. I don't know. Whatever. So Joe Black gets voted back in. Okay. And then apparently Joe Black just did something to RuPaul because RuPaul just really has it out for Joe Black because Joe Black then gets probably sent right back out at the end of the episode. That's the summary. Commentary, guys, please help me. Color commentators, let's go.
Okay. So I think the biggest thing here, of course, is RuPaul's meltdown over Tia Coffey and Joe Black's outfits and how they were basic. They weren't drag enough. You had 7 months to put something together, put a rhinestone on an H&M dress, blah, blah, blah. And it was so completely unnecessary. First of all, I love this tweet. I got a tweet from Amy, who's one of our visitors
here.
Hey, mom, no, but she tweeted this amazing thing that was like RuPaul going off and saying, this is the world stage of drag. You should be dragging up, like, you know, do a rhinestone, blah, blah, blah. But then also had the photo of RuPaul in a face mask and a hoodie for the finale of season 12, because you don't have your 50 person team to do that, which means you don't have the skills that those queens up on the stage do. So let's just talk about a little bit of hypocrisy here.
Yeah. Also, you're in Old Navy ads.
Yeah, come on! You changed
your... I didn't even think about that. Now, that's a read. Now, somebody should save that in their back pocket for season 14.
Oh,
because,
God. Please.
But, like, the fucking privilege. I'm sorry. But, like, especially because there was also a series. I ended up seeing it on TikTok. But it was, like, a series about what happened with the queens during quarantine. Some of them,
really?
Like... Yeah, like Ellie, yeah. Ended up like filing that she was homeless and ended up like these queens are struggling.
Yeah.
So yes, of course they get 7 months to prepare. Oh wait, I'm sorry. There was a pandemic going on.
Yeah.
So like
it's not 7 months to prepare, it's 7 months to survive.
Yes, mm-hmm. Thank you.
And
thank
here's
you.
The thing. I know that we've had queens in the past on any season of Drag Race who don't have the funds, who have spent every penny they have to get to that show. Because it's not like the show pays for your flights or anything like that. No, you have to pay for everything. We've had people like Chi Chi Devane, who has been amazing and like made things out of duct tape and like all those kind of wonderful things. But they don't have the resources.
Mm-hmm.
They don't mm-hmm. have the resources. And mm-hmm. if you are just going to be so privileged as to think like, oh, how dare you not rhinestone an H&M dress? Did she do well in the challenge or not?
Yeah, exactly.
I also feel like isn't the drag culture over there just a little different than
like, that's
the
why
drag
RuPaul
culture over
that,
here?
And that's why what's also so frustrating is having RuPaul and Michelle over there. I mean, I get Michelle has at least a little bit more experience with like UK and UK drag, but still to have RuPaul come up in here and be like, I'm sorry, you don't do things the same way as the US. This is why people hate America.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, over to other countries on their drag shows and we tell them that they can't wear H&M.
Yes, drag in the UK is very, very different. It's based out of pantomime. It's based out of camp and all these other things that aren't a part of American culture. So RuPaul, know your references when you're going to go over there.
Yes. Where is the documentary for RuPaul about this? But like regardless, but even regardless, right? Like it's still like don't... it's just frustrating because I didn't even think they looked that bad. Also, I was like, so it felt very out of place. And the fact that they just went in on their outfits, like, and also the runway look was gorgeous. And yet you are still stuck on Joe Black's look from the performance, which I'm sorry. That's like, when do we even?
Yeah, she looked like Madonna. That's to me what I got was a Madonna. Mm-hmm. With the hair and all that kind of stuff, was a Madonna look. Can we also appreciate that Joe Black's drag character is an old woman, a campy old woman? So when she was saying that everything looked a little old, she was referring to the fact of the character that you freaking casted
her
for. Don't come back. That's what's just so frustrating. Can I just be completely honest? I'm over RuPaul. I'm over RuPaul as a judge. He should not be judging this anymore. Thank you so much for you know, being a trailblazer, but you are the epitome of somebody who says, I did all this great work, so therefore everybody should just worship what I do, and not even take the time to consider who you're casting on your show, why you're casting them on their show, and what the current cultural climate is. You have a wonderful job here. You have a wonderful platform, and all you're doing is belittling people who don't have your privilege and resources. And yeah, you worked way harder than most people will ever have to have some of that privilege. Because let's be honest, as a gay black man who grew up in the 70s in the South, the 60s and 70s in the South, you did not have that privilege. And I understand that. But there's so much that you have privilege for now that you can't just sit there and just come at these queens this way.
Maybe Joe Black should have considered fracking. I'm just saying.
An oil rig.
Honestly.
Well, and that's the thing is that, like, we're not going to take anything away from what RuPaul has done and what RuPaul has contributed. But it's just like, use your privilege for good, right? Like, don't use it to then keep the people down who are below you, right, Amon?
Like, you're talking about, like, wanting to, like, everybody has ideals of, like, wanting to change the system, right? And then sometimes you get sucked up in the system, and then you're bred to, like, uphold the very same things.
System of privilege,
So it's like, you have to move past that. And, like, the whole H&M thing, it's like, that to me doesn't work. And I understand, like, wanting to see queens come on the show and give it their all and, like, put time and care into their looks. And I don't think that that's not what's happening here. I think that the drag is just different. And I don't think that you have to, like, boil it down to, like, H&M. First of all, I've been to H&M, and H&M isn't necessarily that inexpensive, mind you. And it really should be about what you do with the H&M, because that's why you have the whole drag on a dime challenge anyway, right? Like, you have them dressing up in noodles and beads and all sorts of, like, weird hard materials to work with, and you love it when they're able to come up with stuff like that. So it really shouldn't be about, like, wearing H&M. It should just be, you know, make sure that, you know, come onto the stage, and I want to see that you worked hard at the look that you are giving. And sometimes there are queens that come on there and you're like, what, girl, what are you doing? But why are you yelling at them? But you didn't have that much animosity for Lala Ri when she came out there looking like fucking the snowman of bags. Like, it was just like,
you don't see us, like, coming on here and being like, well, or you don't see the queens at least coming on and saying, like, well, let's just take a look at how you looked in Top Model when you were a guest on there. Cause girl, that was or Project Runway. There were some choices you've made there. And here's the thing. Like, also the audacity for her to tell Tia Coffey, if you had the 50 person team that I do, well, you would look like, well, me, whatever. And but she's trying to read Tia for not dressing in the stereotypical way that body should be dressed at, like that body type. That's ridiculous. The whole point of drag is that you play around with what gendered roles are. She doesn't have to look a particular way. And this is at least the second time within a couple weeks on this particular season where you have told a queen to fit your ideal of what drag is and completely disregarded what their drag is.
I'm so over it. I'm so freaking over it. Like, this episode just sent me and I also have a lot of H&M, and I felt personally insulted. What do you have against H&M, RuPaul? God damn it.
I definitely feel like Michelle probably said something to him, like, in between takes, like, no.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Because, I hope, like, so.
This is not going to be good because of the fact that he, you know, when they came back and he sort of, like, did a half-assed apology, which really wasn't even an apology because he really didn't say sorry. He just said, I'm only doing this because I'm hard on you because I care and I want you guys to do well.
Boo.
I also was in quarantine, so, you know, that has something to do with it. Whereas, like, I'm now just learning that one of them had to file for being homeless or whatever. You want to talk about how you were cooped up in some fancy hotel, probably downtown London, for 2 weeks. Oh, the fucking horror, RuPaul.
It's just so disrespectful at the end of the day. And I've listened a lot to the What's the Tea podcast. I understand quite a bit of where RuPaul comes from and how RuPaul thinks about things. I think there's a lot of really wonderful nuggets of advice and information that he's able to provide. And same with Michelle. I really respect Michelle a lot more as a judge, because to be perfectly honest, RuPaul was kind of plucked and then in a lot of the 80s and 90s, even though he worked really, really hard and did all these other things, he got the luck of the draw versus Michelle really worked her way up and became friends with RuPaul. And they did a radio show and that kind of thing together. But she's been more in the trenches with drag queens and such, and kind of I would say he was too. But like there's a difference there where there's a little bit more that specifically now she's still in the trenches with a lot of the Ru girls when they go on tour and such.
I mean, they all have really kind things to say about her. Like, you know what I mean? She maintains relationships with the queens more so than RuPaul does. RuPaul just goes back to to fracking. Like,
I mean, for me, the classic example is like, look no further than All Stars 2. And like, of course, Michelle has her faults, but like when she's out there talking to Adore Delano, like that's the moment where I'm like, okay, yeah, like she has this close relationship with the queens, and I think that she's genuinely invested in them. So it definitely has a little bit of a different feel. But and again, okay, look, we can criticize RuPaul for what RuPaul is doing now and still be like, it's multifaceted. Yeah. Okay, we can still respect
that black and white.
Yes,
exactly. So many wonderful things that RuPaul has done and continues to do, and
but also H&M. Really,
but just like in the same way that we want. Well, not in the same way, but like in a similar way that we want Elliot, for example, to take ownership over things that she has said that have been awful and racial. And also there were transphobic remarks there that I forgot to get into as well. Things that she has said and done. We want RuPaul to also take accountability for, honestly, the ageism, which is normally done in the opposite way, where people are normally ageist towards older people, but he's very ageist towards younger people. And take some of those comments, those cultural references, the privilege that you have as somebody who does have money, and apply that as well to your critiques, because truth is, in this position, you have a lot of power. You're not just the host of the show. You're those people's icon that they've looked up to for a long time. And on top of that, you're the executive producer. So you know how everything's going to be edited together. So please take some accountability and learn from this and grow. God knows your brand is right. Learn from this. We were all rooting for you.
Oh, man. So that's where we're at. In terms of the state of my feelings, it's fine. Everything
I feel so
is
much
fine.
Better though. Speaking of,
I do feel
health,
better too. Yeah,
this,
same. You know,
sometimes it's about talking through things, and for me, this was perfect.
Good. All right. Well, I'm glad we were able to do that for you, and hopefully for the listeners as well, get a little bit of that frustration out about what's going on in the world of Drag Race. All right. So there's one last thing that I want to plug before we get out of here. A friend of mine sent this to me, but the Chicago Black Drag Council ended up doing a Black Valentine's Day cabaret this past weekend. I'm pretty sure it might be over. However, if you're interested, which we know Chicago Black excellence, well, Chicago drag excellence in general has been just like popping up everywhere. So it's just something that, you know, they didn't end up ultimately reaching their goal. But if you'd like to reach out to some really fabulous drag performers, you can check out their GoFundMe. And it's the Black Valentine's Day Cabaret GoFundMe, which is still live. And I'll post the link in the show notes. So if anybody is interested in that. Okay, let's get out of here. Beth, thank you so much. Where can people find you on social media? What are you up to?
They can find me ranting away on my weekly meltdown as well as on my Twitch channel, which is twitch.tv/AugustaWind11. I've been doing some games. This week, I will be doing Among Us with Jeremy Carey, formerly known as Fifi O'Hara, and a few others. We're going to be doing it in the theme of 90s cartoon characters. So stay tuned to see which one I come out as. That's going to be
like
Saturday.
That.
It's going to be a lot of fun. And so, yeah, follow me there. And then on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at AugustaWood11.
Okay, fabulous. And Aman, what about you?
You can find me at Aman Adwin everywhere. Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch. Still doing my Glee podcast with Matt. Check us out at Choir Room Pod. And that's about it.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Liana RHAP and on Twitch at Liana Ism. Also doing some Among Us, some Fall Guys, some Animal Crossing, some at some point potentially. Anyway, just like chit chatting, shooting the shit, kicking, hanging out, laughing. Anyway, if you're interested, follow me there. And of course, If you'd like to support all of the beautiful things that we get to do here with the Drag Race podcast, consider becoming a patron of RHAP. Go ahead and head on over to patreon.com/RHAP or robhaswebsite.com/Patreon if you'd like to join the program. Also, leave your star ratings and reviews for us on iTunes, and that is at robhaswebsite.com/Drag Race. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes, and we will talk to y'all soon. Bye.